This is the BBC, with the Daily Minutes podcast. Oh no, it isn't. I mean, this is the Daily Minutes podcast. This is, however, not the BBC.
Oké, het kraakt allemaal nog een beetje. Daily Minutes, podcast, 17 oktober, ik moest even nadenken. 17 oktober 2019, dit is het bulletin van donderdag. Nou, dat was met een dagje weer wel. Heel slecht geslapen, maar dat heb ik vanochtend ingehaald. Maar ja, toen werd ik met forse hoofdpijn wakker. Dus het werd geen super productieve dag, hoewel het eigenlijk nog wel meeviel. Maar ik heb niet zo verschrikkelijk veel puf met al om nu iets in te spreken. Ik moet nodig met mijn projectje verder, waar ik een paar weken geleden mee gestopt ben, toen ik de eerste hoofdpijnverschijnselen kreeg. Ik had dat afgelopen weekend al willen doen, maar dat is er niet helemaal van gekomen. Ik hoop de komende dagen ik zal in ieder geval wat tijd vrij houden, want het is wel een beetje erg met projecten momenteel. Even kijken, voor vandaag ga ik niet heel lang inspreken. Ik heb helaas ook geen data nog, maar goed, het is gewoon even op nu. Ik heb tot 5 uur of zo gewerkt en tot 4:15 zelfs. En toen had ik het wel even gezien. Ik heb even wat gegeten, voor de tv gehangen en het is nu 6:40, dus ik mag nog wel opschieten ook. Ja, ik heb niet zo heel veel te vertellen. Ik kan nog wel wat over vroeger vertellen, maar dan moet ik eerst nadenken wat ik doe. En ja, misschien dat ik dat ook maar beter voor een andere keer kan bewaren. Ik wil in ieder geval vandaag dat wat ik vorige week nog niet had gebracht, of vorig weekend eigenlijk, dat is ARRL Audio News. En er is een item van de dokter is in over traps. En dat is ook altijd nogal leuk. Ze gaan er niet zo diep op in, de beide heren, maar het is toch vaak wel interessant. Ja, ik heb 2 nieuwsberichten die er eigenlijk uitspringen. Radio Caroline North, is dit weekend, als ik het goed zie, klopt de datum. Die naar een oud bericht zit te kijken. Nee, komend weekend is Radio Caroline North actief. Radio Caroline South die zit op 1368. Noord en Noordwest, even kijken hoor. Die zouden dan op 648 zitten. Zeg ik het nog goed? Ik zeg het net andersom. Ik ben lekker bezig. Maar goed, het is zaterdag en zondag. Aanstaande zaterdag en zondag. Het weekend ook van de Jota. Het zuidelijke station zit op 648, waar ze uiteraard altijd zitten. En het noordelijke station zendt uit via MANX. Ze doen dat wel vaker. En zijn dan in het noorden te ontvangen. In ieder geval Radio Caroline. En er is ook een website, Radio Caroline CO UK. RadioCarolineCO.uk. En dan breukstreep, een hekje en home, HTML. Beetje raar dat hekje er staat. Misschien moet dat helemaal niet. Maar het lijkt me tenminste een beetje vreemd bij websites. Er was nog een ander bericht. En dat is dat de Veerland voorstelt om een guardband in te stellen in het 5G-gebied. De overheid wil in 2020, als ik het zie al. Ja, nee, 2022. Wel eens een deel van de 9 centimeter band willen ze aan 5G gaan geven. We hebben daar nog een heel klein stukje amateurband. Ik geloof 10 megas of 20. En dat zou dan mogelijk verloren gaan. En een guardband die wordt wel vaak ingesteld om bijvoorbeeld 2 providers te scheiden. Of om een satellietdienst van een provider te scheiden. Dus dan wordt er een stukje leeggelaten. Bijvoorbeeld bij DECT telefoons hebben ze dat op een gegeven moment ook gedaan volgens mij. En dan weet ik niet precies of dat zo was. Maar je mag dan daar ook experimenteren met GSM op in dat stukje tussen die guardband. Als ik het nog goed onthouden heb. Maar in ieder geval, dat gebeurt dus vaker. Dat er zo'n stuk leeggelaten wordt. En dat sommige gebruikers daar dan toch gebruik van mogen maken. Een voorbeeld van een guardband in amateurband is er ook. Dat is op 29 megahertz. Je hebt daar de repeaters zitten en de aanroepfrequentie. De aanroepfrequentie is 29,6. En verder zitten de repeaters in Europa 29,620 tot en met 29,690. 29,610 is een frequentie voor papegaai-repeaters of echolink-nodes. Daar zit geen ingang bij. En de ingang die erbij hoort, die zit op, dan moet ik even denken, 510. 29510. En dat is om om de satellietingangen, om de repeateringangen te scheiden van de satellietfrequenties op 10 meter. Die zitten daar net onder tot 500. Dus dat stukje 510, dat moet leeggelaten worden. In ieder geval leeg van veelvuldige repeater gebruiken, hoewel de repeaters op 10 ook niet zo druk zijn. Maar in ieder geval om problemen te voorkomen. Dus ook daar wordt dat gebruikt, die guardband. Zou misschien een goed idee zijn om die band te behouden, want het is wel zonde als we daar niks meer hebben. Hè? Die band is ernstig bedreigd wereldwijd.
This is ARRL Audio News, your weekly summary of news highlights from the world of amateur radio.
I'm Carla Pereira, KC1HSX, and these are our stories for Friday, October 11th. Harold Goretzky, K6DPZ of Richmond Hill, New York, is facing a $17,000 fine imposed by the FCC. Goretzky was issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture on October 3rd for causing intentional interference on a local repeater and preventing other radio amateurs from using it. The FCC notice recounted numerous complaints alleging that Goretzky was deliberately interfering with a repeater in Glen Oaks, New York. In June of 2017, the FCC issued a warning letter to Goretzky, advising him of the nature of the allegations against him and directing him to stop using the repeater going forward. Nonetheless, additional complaints were filed. In April 2018, agents from the FCC New York Enforcement Bureau drove to Richmond Hill to investigate. Following an inspection of Goretzky's station, the agents advised him in writing that he was prohibited from using the local repeater. After the FCC received further complaints regarding Goretzky's continued operation on the local repeater, an Enforcement Bureau agent again drove to Richmond Hill to investigate. The agent monitored the VHF repeater's input and output frequencies and, after observing deliberate interference to other stations, used direction-finding techniques to identify the source of the transmission as Goretzky's station. The FCC said Goretzky willfully violated Section 333 of the Communications Act and Section 97.101 Part D of the FCC's Amateur Service Rules, demonstrating a deliberate disregard for the Commission's authority and the spirit of amateur radio service by continuing to interfere with the local repeater despite having been warned. In Greene County, Ohio, one public official not only observed the ARES simulated emergency test this month, he participated in it with Greene County ARES. Greene County Sheriff Gene Fisher, KX8GCS, checked in when the Resource Net Control, Bob Baker, N8ADO of Beaver Creek called for volunteers. Although the suggested scenario called for only using Simplex, the ARES group used the Xenia Amateur Radio Weather Net repeater to reach out for as many volunteers as possible. Net volunteers then switched to a Simplex tactical net to communicate with the ARES command center. Sheriff Fisher had an intense introduction to ham radio in the spring of 2017 when the Dayton Hamvention moved to Xenia, and his department dealt with traffic control and other issues created by the influx of more than 25,000 visitors. At the urging of several hams, Fisher subsequently got his license and his wife became relicensed. Fisher has since upgraded to general. Ward Silver, N0AX, is the winner of the October QST cover plaque for his article titled About Impedance Matching Circuits. The QST cover plaque award, given to the author or authors of the most popular article in each issue, is determined by a vote of ARRL members on the QST cover plaque award page at www.arrl.org/cover-plaque-poll. According to reports, Southern rocker Larry Junstrom, K4EB, passed away on October 6th. Junstrom was a founding member and bassist of Lynyrd Skynyrd, although he left the group before it recorded its first album. He's better known as a member of another Southern rock band, 38 Special, with which he performed from 1977 until retiring in 2014. Licensed in 1962 as WN2LKF, later becoming WA4LKF, he was a regular attendee of Orlando Hamcation. Junstrom was inactive in amateur radio during his busy years on the road, but picked up the hobby again in 1990 and became an avid DXer with 347 entities in mixed DXCC. He was a frequent check-in to the Musician's Net on 40 meters. After retirement, Junstrom worked in real estate in north central Florida. In DX News, due to the illness of a ZK-3A Tokelau Islands de-expedition team member, the operation has shut down a couple of days ahead of schedule. According to an announcement, the team has ceased operations and is packing up all equipment to get on their boat. The announcement did not identify the ailing team member. As of October 8, ZK-3A had logged approximately 50,000 contacts in 7 days on CW, SSB, RIDI, FT8, and Moonbounce, as well as 10 contacts on SlowScan TV. Hrein Milosevic, YT1AD, is the ZK-3A team leader. Although ZK-3A ended early, several new operations took to the airwaves this week. The shortlist includes 9J2MYT in Zambia, primarily operating SSB on 40 through 10 meters, 9G5GS in Ghana, mostly operating on FT8, T30GC on West Kiribati, working SSB, CW, and RIDI, and TA8UW on Palau, using FT8 and CW. Lots of special event stations will be on the air this weekend, including WC0RC from the Hartville, Missouri Fall Festival, K7T celebrating Columbus Day, N6M at the Rockland Mini Maker Fair, W0D celebrating Earth Science Week, and N3I honoring 100 years of radio. You'll find more information about these operations in your October issue of QST Magazine.
And now with this week's satellite update, here's Bruce Page, KK5DO.
A two-person team from Cal Poly, one a Cal Poly aerospace engineering professor and the other a computer engineering student, helped the Cambodian space program get off the ground in August. The pair traveled to the capital city of Phnom Penh to assist a group of high school seniors with the goal to install and test the students' ground station for tracking satellites, not to launch a national program, but they were happy to play a role in the potentially history-making student project, as well as the bigger picture of lifting the nation into orbit. Thanks to the AMSAT News Service for this story. FO-29 will be available until under-voltage control activates in the CW telemetry. If it is turned on, you can use a satellite. Several hams have recently earned their VUCC on satellite, KJ-4M with 102 grids, and N4BAF with 100 grids. If you're in the D.C. area during the symposium, I will be checking cards for Workdahl States and VUCC. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO, for the ARRL Audio News.
I'm Steve Ford, WBAIMY, and this is the ARRL Audio News Propagation Forecast for Friday, October 11th. The sun remains spotless, and unless you count the extremely brief appearance of a spot a couple of weeks ago, it's been blank now for a month. As a result, the solar flux index has dropped to about 67. The solar winds are blowing our way, but we should only receive a glancing blow this weekend. That being the case, conditions should be pretty good on 40 and 80 meters in particular. On VHF and UHF, expect some good tropo openings in at least two areas over the next several days, from the Carolinas north to the mid-Atlantic states and northern New England.
And that concludes ARRL Audio News for this week. Our thanks to all contributors to this week's report. ARRL Audio News is produced by the American Radio Relay League, the National Association for Amateur Radio. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment about ARRL Audio News, email us at audionews@arrl.org. This program is copyright ARRL, all rights reserved. 73, and thanks for listening.
This is The Doctor Is In, your bi-weekly podcast that discusses all things technical and not so technical. The Doctor Is In podcast is produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, and sponsored by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST editor Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the doctor himself, Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Let's talk traps, Joel.
Okay.
I'm not going to accuse you of entrapment.
Nope.
I've got to stop with the puns. They're just not working well. But really, many people don't know what a trap is, and they're unusual devices in their own way, aren't they?
They are. Kind of clever, I think, and very straightforward. Basically, a trap consists of a parallel connected capacitor and inductor. Now, as everybody should know, that makes a parallel resonant circuit, or sometimes called a tank circuit, that has a very high impedance for current going through it from one side to the other at its resonant frequency. You can almost say it acts like an insulator. Now, that's just what you need at the end of an antenna as an insulator. So a trap acts like an insulator at that particular frequency, and it's wide enough so it can act that way across a band. So if you have, let's say, a 10-meter antenna, and you put a 10-meter dipole, and you put a 10-meter trap at the end of each side, you can extend wire beyond it, and the 10-meter dipole won't know that the wire is there because it's on the other side of what it thinks is an insulator.
It's almost like a switch.
It is. Well, it is, yeah.
That's yeah.
A good way to look at it. It's a frequency selective switch.
Yes.
So if you have enough wire to make the total length, a 15-meter dipole hanging beyond the 10-meter one, the antenna on 15 meters, the trap will look like an inductance, and that acts like a loading coil that makes it for a slightly shorter 15-meter antenna. And so on 10 meters, it just sees the 10-meter part. On 15 meters, it sees the whole antenna, works as a 15-meter dipole. And you can keep doing that. You just have to start with the highest frequency in the middle so the other signals can get through. You can have multiple bands on one dipole with just these traps.
So in other words, it's a plastic PVC type tube with a capacitor and a coil inside it that is acting as this tuned circuit. Is that correct?
Yeah, basically? Absolutely right. Yeah, sometimes the coil is wound on the outside of the PVC and the capacitor's inside. Sometimes the capacitors are getting harder to find than they used to be. It used to be mica capacitors were used. There are some high voltage capacitors that are available that'll work. And it used to be you could buy these traps. There was a company that made traps.
Yes.
Unfortunately, they no longer do that. And to my knowledge, there is no other company that's come in to replace them as a trap provider. And they had a design in which the capacitor was actually formed by two pieces of aluminum tubing with plastic in between them and another piece of plastic around the outside. That served as the capacitor and the coil form for the coil. But there is hope. A number of manufacturers provide trap dipoles, and I suspect they will provide replacement parts. If you called them up and said, can I order a pair of 10-meter traps from your whatever model dipole, they would probably be happy to provide them to you. I don't know. I've never tried that, but I can't see why they wouldn't.
Well, you know, you used to see quite a few trap dipoles for sale and not so much anymore. Why is that?
I have no idea.
Something changed, apparently, in the technology. Maybe it's because with antenna tuners remotely or in the station, you can have a multiband dipole without traps. I don't know.
That's true, and that may be a big part of it because when we were starting out, coax-fed antennas were everything, and that's sort of leaned you towards a trap dipole if you wanted multi-bands on a single antenna. Nowadays, with the center-fed ZEP and window line and a tuner, you don't need traps. So what's the trade-off here? Well, A, the trap dipole doesn't need an antenna tuner.
Right.
Except you have to be careful about that because all dipoles, unless they're fancily designed, as we've discussed in a number of places, will not cover all of 80 meters without doing something special. That doesn't change with traps. It's still the same problem. But all the other bands, pretty much, the HF bands, will work on trap antennas without a tuner. I guess I have to say 10 meters, you may have trouble making it work on the HF single sideband portion and the FM portion.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you're doing one or the other, it's not a problem. And most people use 10 meters for HF, CW, and single sideband use, or AM. So, you know, what's the trade-off here? Well, with the trap dipoles, you can use coax feed, which is good, except, of course, it does have more loss than window line. You don't need a antenna tuner, but the traps themselves add some weight. They add a failure mode component to the antenna, multiple ones of them. And, you know, you get some critters living in the middle of your trap, and it probably won't work very well.
Or water getting into the trap?
Water is not good.
Yes.
You have to design them carefully so the water can run out, just like other things. But otherwise, it's pretty straightforward, and it's easier than some other kinds of multiband dipoles, like the popular arrangement with multiple parallel connected dipoles.
Now, the venerable fan dipole,
exactly,
yes.
Exactly, for different bands, and that can work well. The trap dipole tends to have a wider bandwidth and is less critical once you get it set up to cover the whole band. It also doesn't have the problem that the fan dipole has, is as you raise it, it always invariably seems to wrap itself around itself and
yes.
make a big tangle up there. Whereas this is all one single wire with lumps in it, which is a little easier to deal with. The other nice thing about it compared to a center-fed ZEP is, and this is depends on your interests and desires, center-fed ZEP uses the whole antenna on every band, which means on the bands at which it's longer than a half wavelength or longer than a full wavelength, they, instead of having a two-lobed pattern, it has more complex lobes in different directions, which means you can't talk to the same people on one band as on another sometimes. Now, that can be good if you only have one antenna and you want to talk to different directions. You say, well, to work that DX station, I need to wait till they're on 17 meters, but to talk to this one, I can work them on 40. I've made use of that over the years. It's not a big issue in a way. On the other hand, if you want to talk to the same stations on a regular schedule, you will find you can't necessarily go from band to band as well.
True.
So it's a trade-off. You know, and in a way, the center-fed ZEP has the advantage that you're using the whole antenna, so you have some gain on the higher frequencies that you don't get on dipole. So a trap dipole acts like a single-band dipole on each band. It also has the disadvantages that the traps do have a little bit of loss due to the circulating current at the resonant frequency that makes it act like an insulator. And then on the other bands, you have wire resistance and the inductors that add to the loss. The loss is not that high, and it probably is comparable to the loss in an antenna tuner that you would use on the center-fed ZEP.
I've seen traps in some vertical antennas, and of course you see them in tri-band Yagi antennas. People, though, sometimes even in the advertisements for other types of antennas will say, no lossy traps. Is the loss really that bad?
I don't think so. It's very hard to measure. It's not hard to measure if you have an antenna range. You put up a full-size Yagi without a trap, and you put up a trap Yagi and measure. And particularly on the lowest frequency band at which the traps just act like inductors, loading inductor, it shouldn't be very lossy. It will be somewhat lossier on the higher frequency bands where you have the resonant circuit operating, and then you have the circulating currents between the inductor and the capacitor and the trap that, depending on how much loss is in the inductor, have to use up some energy. But I don't think it's a lot. And everything I've seen makes me think it's on the order of less than a dB for a pair of traps. But who knows? That certainly provides a lot more radiated signal than just a dipole without traps, for example. So, you know, you get the benefit of the three-element Yagi more than outweighs the loss of the traps, I would think.
I had a friend some years ago who insisted on running his amplifier into a trap dipole that was not rated for that amount of power.
Mm.
The results were pretty spectacular. The trap, one of the traps, actually caught fire, believe it or not. It actually burned, flame, smoke, the whole thing. So that's a consideration, I would imagine.
Yeah, capacitors have a voltage rating, and you have more power than it's designed for. You'll exceed the voltage rating, and the capacitors will arc over. And the RF, instead of circulating, will be focused there can easily cause a fire. I can imagine that.
So if you're thinking of investing in a trap antenna, you need to be careful and look at the power rating and make sure it's compatible with your station.
Absolutely right. Yeah, that's true of most things.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Let's take a break for DX Engineering. And we'll be back.
I'll be here.
Ever talk to a salesperson who didn't know the difference between a rotator and a rotary phone, or a Yagi and a yo-yo, or a ballon and a ballerina? You'll never have that problem with DX Engineering. When you call us, you'll talk directly with knowledgeable amateur radio experts, people who speak your language. When you contact DX Engineering, you're dealing with operators who are as passionate about the hobby as you are. This means better service, expert technical advice, and a commitment to your complete satisfaction, even long after your purchase has been made. Whether you're newly licensed or a longtime operator, you'll always find a friendly ham who understands exactly what you need on the other end of the line. Plus, you'll find a huge selection of amateur radio equipment, get the fastest shipping in the ham universe, and shipping is free on most orders over $99. Let's talk about your station. Visit us at dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back, Joel, with a question from Jeff, WB2JNA, and he's asking, is it legal to transmit digital signals from your computer speaker or earphone output into your microphone to your transceiver? No interface, just the computer talking, he has that in quotes, into your mic, making sure no other noise gets transmitted as well, of course. Some people seem dead set against it, but I've heard it's fine as long as the signal is free of other noises. What do you think?
Well, there's no specific rule against such a connection. The rules rather specify what comes out of your transceiver going towards the antenna.
Right.
So it's a question of what comes out there and how you know, that relates fairly closely to how you generate it. The problem is digital modes are generally used within the CW portion of the HF band. What that means is that any extraneous sounds that reach the microphone will be illegal there. That would include somebody talking, you know, supper's ready.
Yes.
And
or music playing.
Or music playing. Yeah, that's illegal no matter
what. Cat yowling.
Yeah, yes, all those things. If you could really keep all other signals and noises out of there, there would be no problem. It wouldn't be noticeable. And I guess I have to say that it wouldn't be noticeable if your transceiver is properly aligned.
There you go.
So that you don't have spurious signals that you generate all the time that you don't notice when you're using voice. But generally, it's very hard to do that. You know, the furnace starts, the vacuum cleaner goes by, the cat meows, whatever. So there's no specific rule against it. There is a specific rule against spurious responses.
Yes.
You're not allowed to do them. So, you know, I guess I'm not sure exactly why you'd want to do that. It's usually not very difficult, in my experience, to run an off-the-shelf audio patch cable from a line-out connection at the computer sound card to a line-in jack of the radio and avoid the issue entirely. Now, not all transceivers have a line-in jack, so the mic jack can be used, but that usually is designed for a lower level signal than comes out of the sound card. So you got to make sure that you can adjust the level or put in some attenuation so that you don't overdrive the mic input. Otherwise, you'll end up in the same place making spurious signals of a different kind due to overloading. So you got to watch that. And if you don't have a line-in jack, you can avoid having to switch cables and have a provision to make the adjustments by purchasing a sound card interface box. These are made by a number of manufacturers. They provide connectivity to both your mic and your sound card and generally support transmit-receive switching and level adjustments. Just make sure you get one that is designed to work with your radio's mic connector and wiring. While many radios have 8-pin round microphone connectors, there are at least 3 different wiring arrangements for them. And so make sure you get one that matches your transceiver. Same for the modular ones that look like a Ethernet connector.
Yes.
There are different arrangements for wiring them. So that's very clever. The manufacturers cleverly made it hard for us to just have one accessory that'll work with all transceivers. Instead, you got to get one that has the connector that fits your transceiver. So just be careful about that. And that makes life very easy. You don't have to think about it. Once you have it set up, it's good and it'll work. I used to do that.
From a legal standpoint, audio is audio. However it gets into your radio, whether it's through the mic connector, through the accessory jack on the back of the transceiver, or as Jeff says, with just a, what I guess you would call an acoustic connection.
Yeah.
As you point out, as long as you don't have spurious signals getting in there with it, there really isn't a legal issue as such. But you're right. Going the interface and hardwired route is far superior.
Yeah. It's fine to say that you don't have spurious signals, but I don't know how you guarantee that.
No, not at all.
I mean, in the early computer remote computer days, we used to use acoustic couplers back before the phone company agreed to let people hook to the wires.
Oh, I remember those things.
Yeah,
yeah, you actually took the handset and dropped it into a coupler of sorts.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like Jeff describes. But you didn't have a legal issue there. You know, if you put a little audio on the phone line, that phone line was used to that, so it didn't have a problem.
Yes.
But here, you get things you don't want happening.
Absolutely. Thank you much, Joel.
My pleasure.
If you have a question for the doctor, email us at doctor@arrl.org. The Doctor Is In podcast is sponsored by DX Engineering at www.dxengineering.com. Background music provided by Purple Planet at www.purple-planet.com. This podcast is copyright ARRL. All rights are reserved. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.
Title music is by Croatian artist Blasco and is published under Creative Commons. You can find this podcast on dmpodcast.net, DM is for Daily Minutes, and on several other platforms. De internetfaciliteiten en studio hardware voor Daily Minutes worden gesponsord door 70MHzShop.nl. 70MHzShop.nl.
Daily Minutes Podcast. Whoever hears this is crazy.
En microfoon naar retour.